reactions lately of mentioning board games in public to people, and there's always like one or two people in that group that like comes running up, is like, "Yes, board games! I want to talk board games." We're like, "Yeah, let's do this." I was over at KBPS talking to some students over at their radio station. Shout out to KBPS, they rule. And like two of the people were like, "Oh my gosh, have you ever played Catan?" And I was like, "No." And then they made fun of me a bit. And it's just awesome. There's just like so much enthusiasm out there, and I just wanted to get that in. And James, do you have anything to say before we go to the outro?
No, I'm
All
alright.
right, because we're coming down to the wire here. So thank you for listening to Winner's Bias. If you would like to comment on the show or suggest discussion topics, you can email us at winnersbias@kbu.org. I'm Nate.
And I'm James. We want to remind you that KBOO is a volunteer-powered community platform. That means we are funded by you, the listener. If you enjoyed the program today, please consider showing your support by making a donation. Just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. And remember, it's not about the games you play, but how you throw your friends under the bus along the way. Have a good one.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Tune in to Cubby Cushy, Cubby Cush, Tuesday nights on KBOO. 2 hours of global bass with an emphasis on South Asia and the South Asian diaspora, and an even more special emphasis on the Punjabi diaspora. Hosted every Tuesday, 10 to midnight, by The Incredible Kid. This ain't world music, it's birth of a new world music.
My name is Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guests this week are James Reed and Javier Fumat. They are master printers at Gemini Gel in Los Angeles, and Jordan Schnitzer, art collector. They're here talking about The Only Way to Hold a Weight, Richard Serra prints, which is on now through January 12th at the Oregon Jewish Museum and Center for Holocaust Education. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus today.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
That was Javier, Jordan, and James in order. So, Jordan, these prints of Richard Serra work are from your collection. Serra was known as a big kind of core 10 steel sculptor, but these are all look like black ink on white paper abstract prints. If there's a Serra fan out there who didn't know about this kind of work, tell them what they can expect and what attracted you to Serra's print work.
Well, Richard Serra is generally known as the foremost sculptor of our time, and the giant core 10 sculptures at Bilbao and Lachman all over the country established him as an artist extraordinaire. At the same time, many people don't know, he was a spectacular artist of creating works on paper. And for the last 40 years, the print publishing company Gemini GEL in Los Angeles was fortunate to be the publisher of probably 300 editions of his works on paper. Just as the Corten steel, he was able to take steel and shape it and form it, and the Corten, which is sort of all rusty, just defies one's comprehension. How, when we're so used to steel on bridges and girders and things, to suddenly he takes steel and make it so lyrical and magical in its shapes and forms. Any of us that have been lucky to experience his sculptures still are amazed at his wizardry technologically, to have made the steel conform to his artistic desires. And when you walk around and through his sculptures, you lose a sense of time and space, and it takes you on a magical art journey.
Yeah, so Richard Serra said he didn't want his sculptures to look like an object or a picture. He wanted people to walk in amongst them. Some of them are kind of spiral shaped. They tower above you and you get this bodily feeling. And then he had the same idea with his prints?
Yes. The work on paper is unique. And even if one didn't know that he was one of the most amazing sculptors since time began, his works on paper alone justify his being one of the most important artists of our time. He was able to take, and he doesn't call black a color, but the works are, to most of us, black and white. And how he uses the black shapes and forms and the white spaces around the black, the white of the paper, or the cream color of the paper, plays an important role as the black, as they dance together in this sort of a lyrical movement of again, time and space, just as his sculptures create that sense. You look at his work, and I hope everyone comes to the Jewish Museum and sees the 18 pieces out of our collection of 150 things of Richard Serra, because when you see them, the round drawing of shapes, the square and rectangular shapes, he again is able to do things on paper that no one else had quite done. Part of the reason he was able to create that was because he worked at Gemini GEL with two amazing master printers. Now, for your audience that may not know, what's a master printer? People have made works on paper, deerskin, whatever, since time immemorial. But once the Gutenberg Bible was created and they had sort of, call it, printing presses, artists like Albert Dürer, the German artist in the 1500s, made etchings on wood or stone or a plate. Well, something happened after hundreds of years. After World War II, a woman named June Wayne, she had an art degree, but she said, you know, maybe I'm better off creating a training program because I love making prints. Let me train people to be master printers, people that would learn technologically beyond what most artists know about making prints. So she trained people like the two we have in the studio today, and they went on around the country to a number of print publishing businesses. What's a print publisher? Again, an artist in their own studio can have a printing press and make their work and go to a gallery and sell it. But post-World War II, a number of print publishing businesses where they'd say, gee, Ellsworth Kelly, Robert Rauschenberg, Jasper Johns, and others, come do your work with these amazing technologically trained printers, and we'll handle all the business aspects of getting your work to galleries and museums. So Richard Serra came to Gemini GEL, that was founded 50 years ago, and started working with their master printer. A few years later, James Reed, who's with us today, and for 30 years became the master printer at Gemini, he worked with Richard Serra as well as probably 40 or 50 other artists. Then, almost 20 years ago, Xavier Fumat came, and he was working at Gemini and said to his boss, Sid Felsen, you know, James works with lots of artists, but I think I can do the best working just with one artist. I'd like to work just with Richard Serra. So maybe it'd be nice to hear first from you, Jim, about your experience with Richard Serra for the first years of work there, and then we'll have Xavier talk about his experience. Mm-hmm.
So this is James Reed. You retired, but you were the master printer at Gemini.
Yes. I started at Gemini in actually in 1979 at the end of the year. And in 1980, one of the first artists I worked with, or I was in the studio with, was Richard Serra. And at that time, most of his, he had done some prints earlier in the early 1970s and hadn't done too many prints up until the beginning of 1980. And we came in and we did some basically called a transfer drawing print, where the drawing would be made on a piece of material, transferred onto a lithographic stone, run through the press, and that would transfer the image onto the stone. So when you pulled an impression of that, you would have a correct reading. We did that a few of those prints, that approach, and it was pretty obvious that he was always searching for something more. And the job of the printers are to offer as many possibilities as you possibly can come up with to satisfy what the artist is searching for. And it took many, many years to get to the point of the highly textured prints that Javier has been doing for the last 20 years. And it was most of that period where we were constantly trying to come up with things that would work and then maybe make small changes to that or embellish them. But it was always, there was always a problem that you had, your problem had to solve. And I remember I used to refer to it as my 3 a.m. aha moments when I'd be struggling and trying to come up with how are we going to solve this problem. And you'd be asleep for a few hours and you'd wake up calm, and an answer would be there. Maybe not the one that's going to solve the problem, but it gave you another kind of clear mind as, well, maybe we can try approaching it this way. And so you're always, whatever the artist is, you're always looking to do whatever you can to allow them to achieve their goals in the artwork that they're trying to put together.
James, Richard Serra said, you know, a sculpture is a sculpture, a drawing is a drawing, and a print is print. Meaning there were three different things to him. He was a sort of always drawing. So where does prints fit into his creative output?
There was this kind of unwritten rule that you wouldn't socialize with the artist, and you wouldn't really ask too much in the way of question of what their work is all about. So it really falls back into a real technical approach. I mean, it took me years to have a much better understanding of a lot of the artist's work, and that was something that I had to create myself. It was something that was never taught to me. As a printmaker, you're doing everything you can for the artist to make them have positive results.
I think the reason why Richard Serra, just like many other artists, liked working of drawings and of prints, when in the case of Richard Serra, he's best known for his giant sculptures, is that those big giant sculptures, first of all, they usually would start with a drawing. He would draw out what he wanted to then make, to then go to the fabricators and so forth. But those things would take a year or two, and they were massive sort of things. So I think there are two reasons why he liked making works on paper. One is, as an artist, and my talking to others like Ellsworth Kelly and Jasper Johns and others, is when they do multiple mediums, it creates a discipline and helps them be better in all three. That maybe his giant Corten sculptures were conceptually and technically better because of the work he did on paper. Also gives them a variety because they constantly need to be challenged as an artist internally. If they get challenged so much by the external world of all the fame and fortune, I think that gets to their head like in any other career, and probably they don't end up being as true to themselves as they need to be. So I think also in doing the sculptures and things while he was working with a team of fabricators, I think he liked the interaction and the work on paper because he could create lots of artistic work almost more quickly than the big giant things.
Javier Fumat, you're a master printer still at Gemini, GEL, but you specialize in Richard Serra's work. And until he died earlier this year. There's a piece in the Jewish Museum, it's called Paths and Edges, and it's black semicircles, and there's a lot of splatter around the outside. But if you get really close, you'll see how thick the ink is, or the paint stick. That was a physical action of his, that drawing with a big, thick stick. Tell us what he wanted with that kind of action painting,
you
know, work.
Anytime, if anybody ever got a chance to see Richard draw, it was not a delicate action. It was a very brutal, physical fighting with the material. You know, he would make this incredible, like, grunts as he moved this big, thick piece of metal. And so for that particular print, he had an idea where he wanted to make work where his hand would not be touching the actual surface of the artwork. So what he did is he applied the molten oil bar onto a surface, a flat surface. He then put the paper on top, and with the steel rods that we got for him, that weighed maybe anywhere between 8 and 10 pounds each, he would then press it down and just use the movement of his arms and shoulders to create that. And what that did is it moved the material and also pushed the material. And so when he was done and you lift drawing from that surface with the oil bar. It had obviously the shape that he drew, but it also had this lift marks that were created because the material was separating from the table onto the paper. And that surface is what we use to make a piece of film that would then be transferred back onto a copper plate. And after being etched for a long period of time, 4 days, something like that, it became dimensional. And so when you look at the print, that material is actually sticking away from the surface of the paper, and it looks sculptural to an extent.
It's an incredibly complicated process, because it sounds like he made a bumpy work and you photographed it, so it's completely 2D, and it ends up being 3D again?
Yeah, if you think of the drawing being dimensional, right? Like, if you lit it from the side, like Jim mentioned earlier, it will create a contrast shadow. If you photograph that, you get something that is similar to the drawing, but it really is not the drawing. Then you can use that film, coat the plate with a light-sensitive film, expose this to it, go through a process of developing it, prepping the plate, and then putting it in the acid bath for hours and hours and hours, sometimes days. And what that does is it eats away at the areas that the film developed out, and therefore those sections become dimension, and they're coming at you. Mm-hmm. In the plate, they're going inside of the plate, but when you print them, you get the opposite. So they actually come towards you, and it looks like the drawing. But if you were to have the drawing and the print itself, the surface is not the same. However, when you look at them, it has the same emotion, the same feel, the same intention as the drawing did.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guests this week are James Reed and Javier Fumat and Jordan Schnitzer. They're talking about The Only Way to Hold a Weight, Richard Serra Prints, which is on now at the Oregon Jewish Museum through January the 12th. Jordan, when you show these works around the country, is there much awareness that Serra was a printer, not just a sculptor?
I think it's a surprise to many people, because his sculpture works are so well internationally known. The Bilbao, all these giant places. It's like a detective novel. They learn about another aspect of this internationally known artist.
Did you get to meet him? I mean, he only died this year.
I only met him one time. We had an exhibition of his work at the Fralin Museum at the University of Virginia. And Friday night, we had all the opening of the exhibition, about 100 works. We had the president of the university and all the board of directors and all the fancy folks and so forth. The next day, on Saturday at 6 o'clock, the show opened to the public for free. I got there at 5:30. This was in February. It must have been like 8 degrees. And I see 75 students outside the museum. And I went up and said, well, tell me, what class are you in that you had to come see this exhibition? And one after another, they said, no class. We just wanted to see the work. Now, in hindsight, because we also had food, they probably all were there to get something to eat. Those students weren't wrong before. They went and partied that night. But the museum did an excellent job, and the students loved the work. There were 4 student curators in various places in the exhibition talking about the work. I think Mr. Serra would have been so proud of those young ladies talking about his work. A week later, I was in Los Angeles at LACMA for the funeral of Stanley Grinstein, the co-founder of Gemini. And I sat next to Sid Felsen, the other co-founder. And he says to me, have you met Richard Serra? I said, no. He said, he's right across the aisle. I went over and tapped on his shoulder, and I said, are you Richard Serra? He said, yes. I said, my name's Jordan Schnitzer. You don't know me, but I've had your work in 30 or 40 museums. And let me tell you a story about last week at the University of Virginia, the Fralin Museum. And I told him the story I just related. And I said, those students, they just couldn't wait to see your work. And he just beamed. And that was the only time I met him. But I think, I hope he was proud of my getting his work out, especially to university and regional museums. And I was touched by his smile and hopefully his appreciation that as a patron, my job was to get this amazing artist's voice to many communities.
James, you work with lots of different artists, but you work with Richard Serra. What was he like as a kind of taskmaster?
He was a taskmaster. He was friendly, but short. It was, there was no sort of social rambling. It was a pretty serious, this is the problem, what are your answers? And it would be a matter of us doing whatever we could to satisfy his needs. In one perspective, you're coming to work for the day, it sometimes taps you on the shoulder saying, do you know who this person really is who you're just talking with? You're rarely in that moment because you're mostly just trying to work together and solve problems.
I always think of him as like living in Tribeca or something like that. Yes. Was he in LA? Did he have to hang around your place to get the work done for like weeks and weeks?
No, typically the artists would come out, and quite often they would come from New York, the East Coast, January, February, March. And so they would be out to enjoy the California sunshine. And they would do what we call a proofing session. They would come in and there would be a project might consist of four or five prints. And we would go through a proofing session, trying different options. And finally, one solution would be made. And the artist would sign that print as an RTP, which would be the standard. That means the right to print. It's a way of keeping the prints as close to the original print that the artist had agreed on.
And Javier, when he would ask you to do something, make a print, what kind of language would he use? Would he use the technical language of the printmaker? Because I know he worked in a steel mill, so he kind of understood the language of steel and industrial processes. How did he talk to you to get across what he wanted?
Well, Richard's vocabulary was immense. And so sometimes he had specific words to describe a specific aspect of a curve, like the inside and the sort of the curve that comes to the outside. Half the time, I actually did not understand what he was saying. He spoke so quickly. I would try to take notes. It was just too fast. So I just started writing initials for what I thought he was saying. And then I would just sit back and put it together. But he didn't use printmaking terms. That wasn't his thing. Printmaking to him was another tool. He didn't know exactly how an aquatint worked. He knew the result of an aquatint, right? And then he could tell you, you know, I want this to be rougher. I want this to be dirtier. I want this to be messier, that kind of stuff. And we would have to interpret simple words that he would use and turn it into a printmaking sort of terminology that would allow us to make what he was visualizing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, conversations were very short, very minimal. A lot of the times when he stopped coming to the studio on a regular basis, it was just phone calls. So he would call, wouldn't even say hello, just would start saying dimensions, you know, or if he was describing something that I needed to fix, you know, 6 inches from the top, 2 inches to the right, there is this one smudge. I need to remove that smudge. And it just kept going and going and going. And that's why I couldn't take notes. So I just started writing. I would even do a sketch here, point to, you know, what he had talked about, figure it out later.
Did he enter the world of Zoom? Did he, where you could visually communicate?
We did it once. And the funny thing was, it wasn't Zoom, but we had access to each other's computer. And we were talking about a print, and he was pointing out, you know, with a red pen from his side, he was pointing out to like this. And then all of a sudden, he started to make little devil drawings. You know, it was funny. Yes, it was funny as hell. Like, you know, because that is not Richard. That was never Richard. But every once in a while, this popped out. You know, and it's like, okay, this guy is human. You know, he's interesting.
You said he sometimes talk about the Yankees, and you're like, okay.
Yes, he, you know, conversations, I'm sure you had the same conversations, Jim. It was just, hi, this is Richard. And then I like, just give you an instruction, click, hang up. Especially if you were working with him, he would call, you know, maybe 5, 10, 15 times a day to check in, right? So in one of those conversations, you know, hey, Richard's on Park One. Okay, you pick up. Yes, he's like, did you see the Yankee game? Did you see Jeter? Like, that was just, and you're just like,
what are you, a Dodgers fan?
I am a Dodgers fan, but you know, it was more like unexpected, you know, and this is like this sweet side of him that many of us didn't get to experience very often. But it just, you know, it reinforced why we would go completely out of our way to, like, do what he wanted. Mm-hmm. Because we knew that there was this person there as well, as opposed to the taskmaster.
And you would build, like, giant acid bath.
We reshaped the studio at Gemini. What was originally the lithography studio where all the major works of Jasper Johns, Rauschenberg, Lichtenstein, and so on. That became Richard Serra's studio. So Jim and I got another place on Fairfax Avenue, and that's where lithography and screen printing moved to. So that way, that whole space could be used for Richard's work, for the one reason that there was this very big, large lithography press in the room, which was then being used as an etching press through some manipulation. You know, his works got bigger and bigger, so we had to build a bigger tank, and eventually we ended up with a tank. It's 750 gallons of ferric chloride. It can etch a plate that's 60 inches tall by 94 inches wide, which is the limit on that was that that's the amount that the press can print. We couldn't go any bigger, although we did go bigger by adding plates next to each other so we could print in different panels image that was 94 inches tall by 180 inches wide, which was the biggest prints that I worked on.
Jordan, there's a print in there called Billie Holiday. It's a black circle. It seems like a bit more relatable than some of the off-kilter, you know, rectangles.
He did a series on musicians, so he loved jazz musicians. So to honor them, he did a series of, was like maybe 10 prints, I think it is, something like that. Muddy Waters, a whole bunch of different jazz singers and musicians. He was inspired by them and paying homage to them, just as many artists would pay homage to other artists. He did a series of musicians. But those works, the titles, the work doesn't look like the titles.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he did these gorgeous abstract black, white kinds of things, and then he just put a title on it in some way. Now, whether he felt inspired by, for instance, the musicians that caused him to do those shapes and forms, I wondered that when I went to the first exhibition and saw six of them up there. So it's fun to talk about it, but I couldn't relate to the work, to those musicians. It was more the, this is the shape and form he wanted to make it work, and then he put a title on it of, you know, X person.
The last two bodies that he did at Gemini before he passed away, one body was called Hitchcock, and the other body was called Casablanca. So, you know, you can make your own thoughts about what he was doing at the end of his life.
Watching a lot of Netflix.
And naming the prints after something like that.
What year was that?
This was last year.
All right.
Yeah. Well, this was, actually, we just finished those prints. We started them 2 years ago. We just finished them.
I think I need those.
You need those, yes.
And James, did you two together have any breakthroughs in printing that you discovered new techniques, things that will last, you know, you can apply to other artists?
I think probably the biggest thing was moving from a flat two-dimensional lithograph to a textural piece. And that was by making these film positives with this very striking light so that we could really take that texture and create the texture again on the plate. Prior to that, it was really just one or two layers of lithography. Although at the same time, just before I started working at Gemini, another amazing collaborator, master printer by the name of Ron McPherson, was doing these very large paint stick pieces with Richard. And he did some that were 12 feet by 15 feet. They're massive, massive pieces. And Ron would make the paper, and then he would also apply all the paint stick. So it was, he would come and he'd do projects in the shop with us, and then he'd sometimes do separately projects with Ron. And it was sort of a combination that came together at some point where we started doing all of, because we were able at that point to provide him with the kind of textural material, and we had matrix that we could use to print multiples of those images.
For your audience, while this is a smaller exhibition of 17 works, it is exquisite, and it gives you a sense, not as a retrospective, but of the variety and depth and breadth of this artistic genius.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guests this week were James Reed and Javier Fumat, master printers at Gemini GEL in Los Angeles, and Jordan Schnitzer, art collector. They were talking about The Only Way to Hold a Weight, Richard Serra prints, which is on now at the Oregon Jewish Museum and Center for Holocaust Education. The works are from the collections of Jordan D. Schnitzer and his family foundation. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Thank you.
Bye. Andy Warhol looks a scream. Hand him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
Let the rhythm.
Hi, that song you can hear in the background is Let the Rhythm Just by the Polish Ambassador. This is Joseph. If you would like to go see the Polish Ambassador on New Year's Eve at McMenamin's Crystal Ballroom, answer this trivia question and email me to win a pair of tickets. The question is, in Salvador Dali's painting Burning Something and Telephones, what is the something? What is burning in the background? Okay, if you know without Googling it, email me, josephgalavan@gmail.com, and I will use a randomizer to pick one of the winning entries, and you'll win a pair of tickets to see the Polish Ambassador at McMenamin's Crystal Ballroom this New Year's Eve. Thanks.
Estás escuchando KBOO Portland.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Hoy martes 5 de noviembre del 2024.